Mitt navn Fredrik Sørensen, jeg jobber i IKT Norge. Jeg skal prøve å lede dere ut denne sesjonen. Programmet spår rundt omkring, har jeg inntrykt det. Men først ut så det Kristin fra Nederland, I hvert fall til det. Så du snakker norsk, hørte jeg, så her det en kobling I hvert fall. Det tror jeg vi kan komme frem til. Du skal se litt på Europa og det europeiske perspektivet, og regner med at det også koblet opp mot åpen kildekode og open source. Så vær så god.
Jeg nok norsk, det stemmer det. Men jeg født I utlandet ganske mye. I tillegg til at jeg opptatt det svenske og danske I forsamlingen. Plus at jeg med folk fra Osland og problemer på Stokkingsøyet. Så jeg har bestemt meg for å holde presentasjonen på engelsk, hvis ingen har noen veldig store innvendinger mot det. Og for det mye lettere for meg da. Så dette litt mer så språkbarrieren, hvis jeg kan starte dette. Yeah. So here goes. English. You can hear me, or I need to get this microphone thing. Okay. Great. Perfect. So I'm going to talk about the impact of FLOSS, which is free libre open source software, on innovation and competitiveness in Europe. Most of my presentation is based on FLOSS impact. It was a project run by Merit together with a lot of other project partners. The whole report is available online, and it's kind of a summary of a lot of other studies that have been done. So it's looking at many, many different aspects, and I'm just briefly going to touch on different issues here. So first of all, I would like to say some things about the last changes in the FLOSS market, in, as we've seen the last years. So basically, way back, it was more a developer-driven market, where the developers in the FLOSS communities were thriving and leading or exploring the FLOSS. And what we've seen the last years is that industry is getting an increasingly active role in FLOSS development, both in their own development as well as active participation in the communities, as well as other business models where they, for example, try to grow a community around their own product. There is a positive impact for SMEs, I think, at least in Europe, and there are a lot of new business opportunities for them in terms of development, support, maintenance and integration, which are different from large companies being in the market. You have a changing and absolutely diversifying range of business models. In the beginning, there were only a few business models or the way business were thinking about how to do business using FLOSS. Well, now people are thinking how to do this. I mean, we even hear here at the conference people saying they're searching for new ways to do it and they're thinking in new ways because you can't do it the same way that you've been doing it in the past necessarily. Some of the main market accelerators are the availability of high quality software, obviously. Low cost and low barrier to entry, availability of customization and local support services, which gives, again, opportunities to local firms, and advantages of vendor independence and flexibility. First, I just wanted to briefly mention some of the FLOSS market shares and penetrations of firms across the globe. It's varying quite a lot. So I don't know why Malaysia was in one of the surveys, but it's around 14%, which is quite low. Europe is around 40 to 60, together with Latin America, and in US and China, currently it's above 80% and it's rising. What is important here is that all over the globe, in all industries, I think, the share is rising, and it's like a positive trend in that sense. Also, about firm size, I mean, this is about industry and why firms are active. And therefore it's interesting to look at, in terms of Europe then, what makes Europe special, what makes Europe different from, I mean, the US or Asia for that part, in terms of active participation. And in Europe it's basically SMEs, so small and medium sized enterprise that are really active in the FLOSS type of development, while in the USA it's big companies. to a larger extent than SMEs. Latin America, it's medium and large, and Japan, it's big companies. From a European perspective, that means that you want to look for your competitive edge, or you look for your advantage for the SMEs. I mean, that's where your strength is. So this has different implications than if you're like dealing with really large firms, and this is where you should be looking. Also, if you look at the driving factors, in Europe it's telecommunication, media, business, financial services, which is low in the US, and in Japan it's more business services, insurance. And again, we've heard this before, 72% claim that the total cost of ownership and acquisition cost is the main reason for choosing to do this. Just another note, we at Union Merit, and I think academic research, being an economic institute, what you really try to do with all these European projects is really to quantify or compare really what's happening. Because we come here and see all these presentations and they say it's good, it's quality, it's this, it's that. But there is no way to measure it, it's no way to compare it. And policymakers, they really want numbers, so they want to hands-on or like really know what's really going on, not just trust someone saying that it's good development, it's nice. So that's some of that. Few words about the public sector. In Europe, 79% of public administrations use FLOSS. This is according to one of the surveys. I mean, all this data is taken from the various different surveys, which are all to be found and referenced in the FLOSS Impact Report, which I give you the link to in the end. The interesting part here, again, is that when you survey them, you say, do you use FLOSS? A lot say no. But then when you give them a list, like, please tick off which software you use, a lot of them would tick off, oh, yes, we use Apache, yes, we use OpenOffice. So they use it without knowing it. I think the awareness is increasing. I mean, if we look at the amount of people attending the government track here, it's clear that the awareness is increasing, but still, you know. Also, usage increases for the growing size of IT departments, which is not so surprising. And the main applications are probably well known. And in all countries surveyed, 60% plan to increase FLOSS use. And again, as we heard in the last presentation, FLOSS on desktops is more usual in countries outside Europe than in Europe. So if you want to look at some kind of global ranking, you want to know where your competitive edge is, where could you really invest or these things, is then Europe is leading in terms of globally collaborating FLOSS software developers and global leaders, and this is followed by North America. Asia and Latin America are disadvantaged, maybe, or maybe we are disadvantaged if they're really, you know, getting a large enough share due to language barriers, and they're getting closer to their local community, so you get a good link there. And then I want to show you some graphs to illustrate this, but I'll take the text first. I don't manage to remember it, maybe. So if you weight the committers by regional PC penetration, then Central Europe and Scandinavia provides a really high number of developers. But if you rate it by average income, India is the leading provider of FLOSS developers, followed by China, which again, in terms of development issues, you know, it has implications and it's worth thinking about. I don't know if you're able to see this. I don't get that. So this is a world map of committers per population. So the dark red means that there is a high concentration, or it's high. So this is North America, Europe, Australia. If you do it by internet penetration, you see that the US already becomes a little bit less red, and more importantly, all Eastern Europe and Asia, they become kind of dark red, and India is starting to pick up, same as South America, so it looks a bit more equal. So this is committers by million internet users. And here, if you look at committers by average wealth, which is per $1,000 per GDP per capita, you see that Norway is, you know, losing color rapidly, and in the second last category. But that's because it's expensive here. But you know, in terms of development and who's going to do the development in the future, all these issues. But I'll move on. So the impact of of floss on the economy. You can have it through various sources, obviously. First, you have the direct impact, which is the primary production of code, and also of firms participating, but also individuals and others. The skills development and the employment generation, because I mean, you care about employment if you're on a European level. New businesses, business models, and for on the user side, you have interoperability, productivity, and lower costs, hopefully. And secondary production and services, which I absolutely want to get back to. And on the indirect impact, you have on floss on innovation and growth. So a lot of the reports or a lot of the studies we've done to quantify this or look at this has been on the Debian distribution, which is at the time it was including Debian 3.1, which is a collection of a lot of software, 200 million lines of code, and using Kokomo we did some cost estimations of what it would cost to produce in a proprietary way in one company. You know, it's not what the real cost, it's the substitution of cost. But it's just interesting to quantify this a little bit to understand what kind of scale this is on. And hopefully you maybe can see this. This is just who is producing the code across distribution and sub-Debian. I mean, Debian is clearly not including a lot of embedded or specialized software. It's more the general package. But you see the blue part on the bottom, that's the individual developers or individual author. And then the purple part, or the second part, it's a company. So company participation is increasing. Because the way we find this, we work together with URJC in Spain, and they're a computer scientist, and they write these algorithms, or I don't know how they do it actually, that goes through the repositories and CVS and bug analysis and all of this to calculate or count how many lines have been written by who. And in this way you can say this code was written by this company, and in this way you have some kind of an indication of what's going on and who's participating where. On the individual side, well, basically 50% of the code base is rewritten every 5 years. It's just interesting numbers, I think, to quantify some stuff. And developers spend less than 40% coding, meaning that if you use Kokomo or any other way of estimating the real cost or the value added or whatever, it's an underestimate if you don't account for this. So the true value of annual individual developer time, using some average salary scales, means that the code would be worth at least, so it's a very conservative estimate, 800 million euros. In that version, there was about 1,000 firms contributing that we could identify, which should be, and 31 million lines of code contributed or committed by firms. Now I'm not really sure, but I think this is the version where we corrected also for double count, because you know that you can have a lot of comment lines, or you can use the same function 10 times, and you don't want to count that as 10 times the effort, because of course it's much easier to use what's already there. So they also take account for these things. So it's a substantial amount of effort and input in here. Then when you look at the firms actually contributing, there are two classes of contribution. It's the very high contribution per employee. That probably means that's a floss-driven business, SMEs, which would be a lot of the type of firms that you find in Europe. And then you have low contribution per firm, so that's floss-adopting businesses, and it includes a lot of large firms. On the other hand, as a side note, which is also important to note in these kind of studies, it's about big firms naturally do more of everything. So a very big firm is more likely to say, well, let's try a little bit of floss and let's do a little bit of this. So it's not that much if they're core of their business model. But therefore, it's also more important for SMEs, possibly. Yes, it's also interesting to look at if you group the firms together, like SMEs and large firms and that, who are active in which sectors, and also which sectors do you find? Because it's not, I mean, here we talk a lot about software industry, like as software industry, but the software industry is very diverse, or software is very diverse, and with this embedded issue, or, I mean, there's software in everything. and that's kind of the point. And that's a surprisingly large number of the contributions come from other industries than the software industry. And what is this? This is firms contributing Floss code, size share by sector. So it just shows that some sectors have larger firms in general that contribute, while other sectors are smaller, but I'll speed up. So. And this is which sectors actually do incorporate Floss into their products or make Floss. I don't know if you can read it. So the blue part is that they do not incorporate Floss into their products, and the yellow part is that they do incorporate Floss into their products. Maybe it should be flipped. But what you see there is that, for example, instruments is 55% having incorporated it into products, computer equipment is 76%, telecoms 68%. And this also has some implications of business models, I think. Again, here, if you break down these categories and look at what kind of software do they do, is it embedded? Is it packaged? Is it customized? You know, is it used in-house? Because these are also have large implications for the business models or how business do this and where you should be looking to increase your competitive advantage or be thinking about, you know, what's my contribution, what license, and these things. So my favorite subject personally, about embedded, it's, as you probably know, it's more about the real-time constraints. It's more networked, distributed, has sensors, actuators, power sensitive. And the thing is, what you see is that there was this other project about embedded systems, not about open source as such, just embedded systems. Embedded system is really anything. I mean, the hair fryer the guy had here out in the demonstration, or you know, anything that's not a normal computer, like a car. And there you have software and hardware together. And one will not work without the other. First, I think it's clear now that all industries, really all industries, the importance of embedded systems and also the importance of software is increasing. It's not like if you're in the automobile industry, you're still going to have a lot of software. You know, it's I think in the last BMW model, which I don't remember the model name of, but there's like something like 60 processors. And in another example I heard at the conference, it was about one of these new warships. They said that 50% of the value added of the whole ship was of embedded systems, whereof, of course, there is a hardware part and a software part, but it's really a high amount, you know, 50%, and then the ratio of this over time is also, it also changes. And yeah, platform substitution, reasons to do this. I think that actually firms that are considering or doing open source in other sectors than the software sector, as we know it, might have an easier task than if you're really in the software sector. I mean, we have heard Oprah and saying that they're finding it kind of hard to find a business model that would work. But if you're in telecom or you're selling your phones, I mean, the software is a cost center, it's not your profit center. So you're happy to do this. You know, they did these examples with having a community develop software. So this raises whole new issues for a lot of other industries. And I think in the EU, what you hear is they're looking for innovation and the strategy forward and which industry should be leading in Europe and which one should we be supporting. I mean, also in terms of software then, I mean, if Europe is good in, I don't know, pick any industry, that also has impact then on the software side. And I think that this probably covers it. Well, there are revenues from Floss, and we did some analysis matching, running through the whole code and finding the, how am I doing on time? 5 minutes.
Oh, 7 minutes.
Well, basically, I'll have to speed up really, really quickly. I'm talking for this test already. I'll just skip this. The skills development is very important for innovation, obviously. It's the ability to create. And by Floss, it's like a training environment. And you learn new skills, technical skills, management skills, legal skills, general skills. And economic growth is about the ability to add value. I already touched a bit on the value added. So then some people were giving the reasons for why they're actually joining this open source community thing, and learning and developing skills were the main reason, followed by sharing our knowledge. And a lot of people are directly or indirectly paid by this. You also have Flos as technology transfer, which is very important, from rich to poor countries, but also from large to small firms, IT rich to IT poor industries, and even industries are catching up. And these issues. Then, of course, being, it's not really academic exercise, it was a scenario building for how is this going, and, you know, modeling really, but using realistic and good assumptions. Like ICT increases the productivity in R&D and production process. You know, you can read them later maybe if you're interested. The final outcome at least was that if you increase Flos-based investment, so only Flos-based investment, keeping proprietary software investment the same, under reasonable assumptions, you will have a higher GDP growth rate of 0.1% per year. And since this is GDP, it's really a lot. And this would amount to 10 billion euros per extra per year, which of course make people kind of excited about this in Europe. And then I wanted to say a couple of words about some other projects, just really briefly. Qualos, it's also a European Commission project that's trying to deal with quality and open source. There are other initiatives also, Squash, I forgot the other name, which you can find on Flos Quality EU. It's a more general portal for quality and Flos, because they're saying, oh, we need a way to compare and evaluate quality, so robustness and evolvability of both product as well as community. Because this is part of the quantification process or the comparability of different products. Flos Metrics is a similar, or it's not a similar initiative, but it's a different initiative of gathering metrics on different Flos projects to be able to say, I mean, how many people are contributing over what time, what's the turnover rates of committers, and I mean, what implications does this have for the community, the stability, the evolvability, and all these things. And another project is Flos Include, which more deals with including other developing countries in the Flos for more of the development. Then we at Merit, UNU Merit, have formed, like the research group I'm working with, have formed a group called the Collaborative Creativity Group. And that website has links to all the projects that we're doing, which is quite a lot. It's also wider than only open source because it's, I mean, these phenomena are relevant for other things. So for example, they're now just launching the official Wikipedia survey to study Wikipedia. And yeah, I mean, there are lots of interesting links and facts there. Flos Impact is where I got most of the charts and the data from. And that's it. So.
I have a question, and you address something called low cost and low barriers. According to the classical business model, low cost and low barriers of entry, basically, even if it makes a business attractive or an industry attractive, however, it makes it quite difficult to compete because the possibility of being substituted by others is quite high. How do you solve this dilemma?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, but I think Flos is a growing phenomenon. It's a growing industry, I think. And what you see is that a lot of these firms cluster around one technology. For example, with the Asterisk, we have a project with Mustang or something. Where it involves a lot of firms working with Asterisk as a technology, and you have SOAP, which is kind of the same thing. I mean, they're happy, the more firms there are, the better the support if they use a support model. and therefore the more likely the customer is going to trust it. I mean, if you have only one, and therefore you'll have more business, you know, because you know that, okay, I'm buying it for this one guy, I'm paying the fair price. I mean, of course you need to cover your costs and all, but if they go out of business, or there is like this whole ecosystem, they call it, I think, this type of business model. So the firms are very happy to have competitors. And really, at least in this space, there is so much work that, that there is no real killing competition, I think, anyway. But, you know. Yeah. Any other questions?
Flossimpact.eu.
Flossimpact, yeah, it's the impact of whatever my presentation is called. So it should be there. And also there is a link to Floss Impact on the Collaborative Creativity Group website. Should be.
Any more? Okay. Thank you, Kirsten. Coming back to the model then. There you go. Okay. Neste. Is there any English speaking persons in the room, or are we possibly going to give this in Scandinavian language, I think? Or
yeah, I can hear about it.
Okay.
Hold on. I think that's mine. That's my